This is a tape of Estella Frankel on April 11th, 1978, by Ricky Saltzman.
Now, this is going to be disorganized, isn't it? Because
don't
you have to.
Don't worry about it at
Look,
all.
See, my grandson Victor gave me this last Hanukkah. It's
oh,
a
wow.
marvelous book. And I got snowed in coming home from Seattle, you know, January the 8th. I was snowed in Cleveland for two days and two nights. I sat up in the airport.
And read
and no, I didn't. But I had carried it with me because I didn't want to put it in my suitcase. And I had all this. And for 2 days and two nights, we were marooned in Cleveland. So I married Harry Frankel in 1923. Rosla married Sig Shore. Rosla's my sister.
Mm-hmm.
Just a beautiful person. Everybody that you talk to will tell you she was just like my mother, just a beautiful person. And Rosla married Sig Shore.
Mm-hmm.
And they have two children. Anne Helene, who lives up in Bucks County. She lives near Doylestown. She's married, and they have a son, Alan. She married Alan Hadfield. Kenny Hadfield. And then Sonia Sloan. Do you know Sonia?
No.
Sonia Shore? You don't know Sonia Sloan? She's very active. She's vice president of our temple now.
Son Gary Sloan?
No.
That's a different Sloan.
Yeah, that's a different Sloan. They have two boys, Victor and... I bet you'd know Victor. Victor's in the University of Chicago now, and Jonathan. They have two boys.
I might recognize them.
Yeah. But Sonia's very active in the community. She was very active in politics, but she's active, very active in Planned Parenthood. And she was Sonia was the first woman graduate of Jefferson Medical School, not as a doctor, in bacteriology. And they instituted a graduate course, and she was the first person to graduate and the first woman to graduate. I forget what year it was. Then she worked up at Temple Medical School. And both girls went in for science. They both went to bacteriology. They went to Syracuse University. Yeah, so I married Harry Frankel. And we have this one son, Dr. Victor Frankel, Dr. Victor Hirsch Frankel, spelled right. And
is he here now? He's the one.
He's at the University of
Seattle, Washington.
They lived in...
This is his son.
That
right?
All these children are
They're
his children.
His,
yeah,
okay.
Right. And Dana, too.
Okay.
All the boys and one girl. And I should get the clippings out and show you. He was the first American to be awarded a doctor's degree in Uppsala, Sweden. But he was already a doctor when he went there. But he had a grant to work under the King of Sweden and the National Foundation, I think, Polio or Arthritis Foundation. I don't know. I have the clippings. I can hunt them up for you. And he went there for a year, but he stayed 2 years. And I flew over there for a disputation. You know, they have to...
They have to defend
their thing. And then they have the book that he had to write. And then they had opponents. And they brought a doctor from Manchester, England, who was a famous doctor that invented a pin for the hip, the Charnley pin. And then there was an engineer, and because this is engineering in the human body, you know, how the body works on engineering principles. And I could show you, the books are out there in the other room. And so I went over there for the disputation, and that's a very serious affair. I mean, he had to wear tails 11 o'clock in the morning, had to have a little bouquet of flowers on the lectern, and I went with them to buy the flowers, and it was so cute. He said to the florist lady, he said, "I don't care what kind of flowers you give me, but they got to be red, white, and blue." And so that was exciting. I had been over there for 2 months the summer before that when they first went over, and then he wrote and said, "Why don't you come over for the disputation?" I wasn't there for the graduation. The graduation, they put on a special hat, and they shoot off a cannon, and they have a gold ring, you know. But I didn't go for the graduation, but I did go for the disputation. The graduation came first, then came the disputation. And they have to give a dinner that night, and it's all very, you know, Swedish, very formal and everything. So now he does travel a lot and lectures, and he gets east once in a while. Now what else can I tell you about me? Let me see about me.
Where were you born? In Wilmington?
Yes, I was born on 2nd Street, and I'm not sure of the exact number, 20-something it had to be. It was where Blotman's Bakery was.
Oh, yeah, I'm interviewing Mrs. Blotman tomorrow night.
All right. Yeah. Well, I was born where they... Now, I don't know if they lived there in the beginning, but they... she's a lovely lady, Mrs. Blotman. And, I remember Uncle Jake always used to walk down... See, the store was 2nd and Madison, and he used to walk down to buy bread, and he liked Mrs. Blotman a lot, and she thought a great deal of him, too. Had a lot of respect for each other. So I was born there. My sister was born in Chester, and she was born... She's 5 years older than I am, so she was born, I think, as 1897. Rosa was born. And see, then there was a... So I don't know when my family came to Delaware, because, of course, I was born in 1902 in Delaware, but I don't know if... I'm sure they came there before that.
You know. Were your parents born in this country?
No. My mother was born in Russia. My father was born in Russia.
And they met
in the United States.
Oh.
Yeah. Mama came with Aunt Rosie. That's Mrs. Barsky. Mm-hmm. And Aunt Mary, too, I was already here, and they worked in a factory in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And because I remember Mama telling me that she got malaria, and she's in hot summer days, she was sitting with a shawl around her working. And you know what's fascinating and interesting? I feel like a sissy alongside of what my mother accomplished, because she must have gone to night school a little bit, or else I remember a woman coming for my cousins coming to the house to help them with the English, you know. But my sister taught in the public schools too, and all the teachers knew Mama, because Mama went to all the meetings with us. Mm-hmm. All the, you know, we'd have a big meeting once a year with a good lecturer, and Mama always went everything with us. Mama just was right in it. And Rosla started to teach in 1918. That was during the war. And Rosa went to training school at 9th and Wollaston. That was the administration building. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what it is. Nothing now, I guess. They even took those girls out before they quite finished, because they needed teachers so desperately, mm-hmm. which is a far cry from today, isn't
it?
Huh? So where was I? Well, now, all right. So I was born, and then on... to something, Mrs. Blotman will tell you the exact address. Then I was born 5 days before Christmas. I'm sure they needed me like a whole nun 5 days before Christmas. I don't know if they had a store there or not. They must have had a store there. But I can remember, like Ashenbach's used to have a store there, because I remember as a little girl, you know. And I don't know how long we lived there, but then... No, then we moved to 24 Market Street, and Papa had that I remember distinctly, 24 Market Street, and I had to be before school age, though, maybe like 5, something like that.
What kind of store did they have?
Papa had a cigar store, and gorgeous pipes, meerschaum, you know what meerschaum pipes is,
yeah.
With all the carvings and everything, and, you know, they were expensive, like this is, what? Almost, 70 years ago, and they were like $12, and, you know, that was a lot of money. That was like a month's wages. Yeah, right. And so Papa had a store, 204 Market Street. We lived above that. I can't recall the upstairs living so much, but and cousins would always be staying with us who came from Europe, you know. And Mama had they always said Aunt Lizzie had a rubber house because she stretched, anybody could get in there. And Mama was so kind to everybody. They always loved her. They all remember her that well. And I don't remember the upstairs living quarters, but I remember standing in the store and at the doorway. I remember that well. Then Papa moved across the street to 217 Market Street. And right below us was one of the best grocery stores in the whole state of maybe the United States. It was Morrow's Grocery Store. And he catered to a lot of the people that had money to spend on a lot on fine foods too, you know. And that's where the crackers were in a barrel, you know, and you bought them by the quarter of a pound. Nobody bought a pound of crackers, my goodness. But anyway, I remember that store so well. And then I remember the Reynolds was across the street, big candy store. First, I think it was on one side and then on the other side. But the Lyric Theater was there, and I remember that it caught on fire one time. And I remember leaning out of the window, you know, we were watching the fire. But 217 Market Street, Papa had a cigar store, and we lived upstairs. And in the back was a big yard, and it was a big building. I remember this. And there were girls that sat there and made cigars. I don't remember cigarettes at all, but cigars. I don't remember cigarettes at all. I don't know. But I think my father smoked cigarettes, though. But anyway, I know I remember making making the cigars, and Papa would make up special blends for special customers. And you know, they had like a horse's in the gymnasium, that kind of a thing. Well, it was lower, but it was like that, like black leather round, and they would put the tobacco leaf, lay it over the form, and then strip what they wanted out of it, and then put different kinds of tobacco leaves together for certain. And I remember my first lesson in manners, because I was standing watching Papa, and very often a customer would come and sit down in a chair opposite Papa and watch him work. And I was standing, which I didn't think about, I was just watching Papa, and Papa said to me, "You have your back to that gentleman." I have never forgotten. I can see myself standing there. And to this day, I'm very conscious of, I don't sit with my back to anybody. You know, in some place, if you're at a luncheon or something, and I have my back, I turn around and I always say, "I'm awfully sorry, I have to sit this way." Isn't it funny how you remember little things? So 270 Market Street, and I went to number 6 school. Number 6 school was like 4th and Walnut. And Rosalind went to number 1 school, which was across from the Addis Kodish, you know, in that block there. That was number 1 school. That was called number 1 school. It later on became the Brown Vocational. It was just called the Vocational School. It wasn't called Brown Vocational School. Just the Vocational School.
Why did you go to different schools?
Well, she was 5 years older. Oh, okay. Yeah. I remember that. Sellers were people that kept a big fruit store right at 4th and King. And Marie Sella and I used to be elected to go. I guess we must have been a little older then, because you brought your pennies to school and the teacher would collect them, and you'd have your bank book or something, and you took it to the bank and you had your own little account.
Oh, wow.
And Marie Sell and I used to be elected to go to the bank, and we always used to stop at her place first, and we'd get some peanuts or something like that. I thought that was pretty neat. And so at 217, then Papa moved up to 8 something Market Street and had a store there. And we then lived, I think, we then lived 815 West 4th Street. And I went to, Rosa was then going to high school, I guess, Wilmington High School, Delaware Avenue. And I went to number 28 school, which then became Willard Hall School, and now it's the freeway. There's no school there anymore, right? And then I went to Wilmington High School after that. All of us graduated from the Wilmington High School.
Did you know Molly Sklut?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure.
I guess you guys were pretty much the same age.
Well, I don't think she's as old as I am. I don't know.
Somebody figured that she was probably in her 70s.
Well, I'm 75.
So maybe she's probably a few years younger.
I think so. I think I always had a feeling that she's younger than I am. I don't know. Age is such a relative thing. Then I went, I have to tell you this. My mother never read a psychology book, but boy, she knew psychology. She didn't have to read a book. I took a course, and I think my mother had lots more psychology than I did. When we lived at 217 Market Street, as I said, Rosalind went to number one school, and her teacher there was a Miss Gillespie. And she taught piano and violin, too. Later on, she became an art teacher in the school. But I think she taught a general classroom teacher. So she used to come to 217 Market Street. I can see it, with a piano up on the second floor, and Rosa would take her piano lessons. And so one day, Miss Gillespie looked at me and said to my mother, "And that one ought to take violin lessons." I was seven then. And that's how I started taking. And I stayed with her till I was 17. I didn't take from anybody else but her in Wilmington until I went to the conservatory. She was very close with me. In fact, she loaned me her violin to take to the conservatory. Mm-hmm. And
which conservatory was that?
Peabody. I went to Peabody in Baltimore. And so I started taking violin lessons. Then we moved, as I said, 815 West 4th Street, and Miss Gillespie lived at 513 Washington Street. And so for close to 10 years, I went in and out that gate of 513 Washington. A lot of those programs that I in there from her recitals and things, I had good instruction with her. And I owe her a lot. We sometimes forget what we owe people, don't we? My, my. And then let me see what. So I went to high school, and they had an orchestra, but there were only boys in the orchestra. Who ever heard of a girl being in an orchestra? You know. So I was in the orchestra though at Willard Hall. Oh, it became Willard Hall after that, number 28 school. And so when I got in high school, I went up to Johnny Taylor, who was the director, and I said, "Mr. Taylor, I would like to join the orchestra." He said, "Oh, we don't have girls in the orchestra." I said, "Well, I play the violin. I'd like to play in the orchestra." He said, "Oh, sometimes my language is a little rough." I said, "Well, you tell me when you're going to use rough language, and I'll leave, and then I'll come back again." So I got in the orchestra.
Oh, that's great.
And I played in the orchestra all during high school. And then...
Were you the only girl then?
And then after a while, another girl came in. Yes, I was, I think, the first girl.
How did the boys treat you?
I've never had any trouble that way. You know, when I did my work in the public schools, like at first, I was the only woman in that field. You know, now they have a lot of women in the instrumental field. But I was the only woman. It never made any difference to me. I don't think it ever made any difference to the men. I mean, we had a job to do, and I was always eager to learn whatever they could teach me, and I think they weren't string people, and they were interested to know what I knew. And I don't know, we always worked very well together. I never had any feeling of discrimination because I was of the female sex. I never felt that. maybe it was there and I just wasn't aware of it. I don't know, but I never felt it. They were always nice to me. They treated me like a colleague without reference to any other way. Where was I now? What were we talking about?
High school.
And then after high school, and my mother, for my graduation present, let me go with Miss Gillespie. That's all in that scrapbook. I was just looking at it today to talk with New York. That's where my teacher's teacher was teaching there in the summertime, Isaac Markison. So I went to study with him for 2 weeks. And I was just looking at it today because, look, that's 1920. That's how many years ago? 58 years ago. And we went to a lot of lectures, and that's where that is. They have a lot of lectures and all this. And I saw one on, like, the League of Nations in there. I'm going to take it, cut it out and send it to Victor, because from that many years ago, it's interesting to see what they have to say. It was after 1918, after the war then. And then I came back, and I, you know, started to teach writing. Well, I went to Baltimore. Then the next September, I went to Peabody Conservatory in Baltimore. And in 2 years, I got a teacher's diploma.
In 2 years?
Yeah. I worked hard. It was expensive. And so I worked hard. And you could do it in 3 years, or you could take 5 years, you could take as long as you want. But 3 years was like the standard. Mm-hmm. But I got it done in 2 years anyway. And then I got married then in 1923. This is like 1922. In 1923, I was still going up to Philadelphia taking lessons from my teacher who also taught in Philadelphia. And then I got married in 23. And in 19, and I was teaching privately, and I was playing at churches. I was doing a lot of, you know, more solo playing mm-hmm. those days, because there weren't many people around to do it. It wasn't that I had that much competition. You know, people were always having lots of lunches and lots of dinners, and they always wanted a little music, you know. Every time the legislatures say we have no frills for education, I often wish that for one whole year they'd cut every bit of music out and let them know what it's like. They'll have more trouble on their hands than they can think of, right? You know. Anyway, that's beside the point, I guess. So, let me see. Then in 1929... my husband and I were separated. My son was born in 1925. Our son was born in 1925. We separated, then I think he had to wait 2 years for a divorce. So I was divorced like 1931 or something like that. And...
Was he a Wilmington?
Yes.
Also?
Mm-hmm. He was... he was born in London, really.
Oh.
But he came to, must have come here very, very young. And... Then I got into the music school. I taught at music school. The music school was, I was teaching privately then. I guess maybe I just taught at the music school. Because 1929 I was at the music school, I know that. And I was there for 15 years. And that was when it was at 8th and Washington. And I taught Sunday school. And my sister had taught Sunday school. And that was when we were up on Washington Street, and we didn't even have the Sunday school building at that time. We just had the temple, the little temple. Do you remember that before they tore it down?
Mm-hmm.
The Grace Church House took it over for a senior citizen. Now I see it's torn down. Well, it was a small temple, but I loved that temple. And we downstairs in the basement was where we had our Sunday school classes, and we had a little bit of a platform, and we had an orchestra. Do you know that we have an orchestra? We had an orchestra. I remember Herman Greenbaum was in the orchestra. I can't remember who else, but I remember Herman Greenbaum. We had an orchestra.
Hmm.
Now, today they can't get an orchestra, but we had an orchestra.
That's pretty good.
Because I remember when it came time for all the plays, like Purim, and I wanted to be Queen Esther so much, but I had to play violin solo because there's nobody else to play violin solo, so I had to play violin, and I never got to be Queen Esther. All my life, I never got. So that's why today when I teach, if the child calls me up and says, look, could we do something about the lesson? I have a chance to be in a play. I say, you bet, because I want them to have those kind of experiences. But anyway, so I taught at the music school, and then, I needed to earn more money than that. So.
You just had the one son.
Right. Mm-hmm. So then I applied to substitute in the public schools.
Mm-hmm.
And of course I didn't have a college degree. They didn't consider my Peabody a college degree.
Mm-hmm.
But those days they weren't worrying so much about college degrees. Well, I don't know. I think they were beginning to, this is in 19, This is about, you know, 1933, I started substituting. And my first job, oh, it's interesting. Oh, when I got my first call, my sister had been teaching for a long time. Well, I got my first call to teach over at Byard School. It was a junior high at that time then. That was 1933. The teacher, 7 days before the Christmas, the teacher was out sick. I knew that teacher, too. I taught her. And anyway, when I got the call on the phone, I can remember, it was at Uncle Jake. I was living then with Uncle Jake a lot of time. Most of that time after that, I always lived with Uncle Jake.
And
Mama. That's my mother's half-brother, really. Only I never knew it was a half-brother till I was about 50 years old, and we were talking about the family one time. They were just brothers and sisters. My mother said, what do you mean? You know, I didn't realize that they came from different, you know, mothers. And so anyway, I turned to my sister. I can see that so well. It was ice on you. You couldn't even walk as I was just a terrible day. And I turned to my sister, and here I am going to substitute music with like hundreds of kids and the orchestra and all that. And I turned to her and I said, because I always used to hear her talk about it, I said, what do I do about the milk money? Because she was always sitting with her little envelope and her money, figuring out, did this child pay her for the milk? How much does she owe the milk? You know, at school, they used to sell them, bottles of milk. So all I could think of was, what'll I do about the milk money? So anyway, you couldn't get it. The trolleys weren't running. It was too far to walk from 2nd and Madison out to, you know, practically 2nd and Broome out that way.
Oh, yeah.
So I saw the, is it cold? Shall I put on the heat?
I'm usually chilly, so don't worry.
That's why I have a sweater on, but I did put the heat on today.
Don't worry about it.
So I saw, there was a butcher shop across the street from Uncle Jake, like Catty Corner, and we always went there, you know, and we knew him very well. And I saw the young fella going out in his truck, and I went over to him, and I said, Francis, are you going anywhere near Byard School? He said, I'm going up in that direction. I said, would you take me? I have a job this morning, and I can't, and there are no buses running. I can't get a taxi. So I went to my first job in the butcher's wagon. So anyway, I was there for 26 days.
Oh,
teacher was out. They were out for a long time. And so I substituted for a couple of years. And then I had worked for Adult Education then, too. They sent me to Newcastle and Newark. I was doing Gilbert and Sullivan operettas, you know, things like that. And then they, Adult Education was sending me down to the vocational school. They had girls down there too, and just to work at a glee club with the girls. I was to go for an hour a week, and for the whole sum of $9 a month. And before I got that first magnificent paycheck, the Board of Education took it over instead of Adult Education. I don't know why that happened, but that's how I got into the Board of Education. And so, no, that was I went there for half a day a week, not an hour, half a day a week, which I got $9 for. And then the next, I got a letter at the end of the year, said they were very well satisfied with my work, and they were pleased to announce that I would get $13 a month the next year. And in the meantime, they didn't have any kind of auditorium there. And so when they had graduation, and they gave me the boys a few weeks before graduation to get them ready for something, and we went across the street to the YMHA and had our graduation there, because they had no place there at all. So then when they moved up to the new building, the Brown Vocational School, 14th and Market, beautiful building. Well, they wanted a man there for football games and band and all that, and I wasn't qualified to teach band. So then my supervisor sent me out for 1 hour a week to start a violin class out of George Gray School. And so gradually, you know, then it got to be half time, and then that teacher out there was real proud of the class, and so she invited all the elementary teachers to come to a tea, and the class played for them. And so all the elementary teachers got annoyed, because why should she have that, and they don't have it in their schools? You know, in those days, the teachers were real proud of loyal to their schools. They wanted everything the best for their school. So this was something that they didn't have. So then I had to do all the work on Saturday mornings. So I used to have 80 kids come on a Saturday morning, four classes from 9 to 12, not a full day even, 9 to 12. I used to teach in Brown Vocational, and then for a while, I remember teaching in the basement of Wilmington High School. So then, it just increased, you know, little by little, till I got to be full-time, just going around to five schools during a string work only. Mm-hmm. But the last few years, quite a few, 10 or not, I really don't know. I just went to Harlan and Williams School and just taught. I taught all the instruments then. No vocal work, but all the instruments. But I was originally, when I substituted, it was with vocal work first, which was not my field really. Then I led the choir. Rosa sang in the choir. Come here, I'll show you something. Rosa sang in the choir.
This is an interview with Estella Frankel on April 20th, 1978, by Ricky Saltzman.
Grandmama's jewelry. And Grandmama had like a lot of strings of pearls, tiny little pearls. There must have been 7, 9 strings of them. And she wore them. Lots of pearls, and then when Grandmama died, the pearls were divided amongst the oldest daughters. I didn't get one because my sister was the older daughter, and the other three sisters. It was divided with the oldest daughters of the other sisters. And then Grandmama had two long earrings that she wore. That's what I wanted to show you on the picture. Really long. And Mama got one of those, and Mama got both of those, I guess, and we had made into lavaliers. Mm-hmm. And I gave my granddaughter the one lavalier. And then Grandmama had a ring that Mama gave to me one time. I gave that to my granddaughter, too, so all that. But that's all from her great-great-grandmother.
Oh,
that's great-great, because I'm her grandmother, and my mother was her great-mother, great-grandmother, and then my grandmother was her great grandmother. So what can I say to you? Yeah.
How did she come in? Was she given these as a gift? They were part of her trousseau?
Who?
Your grandmother, the jewelry?
My grandmother. I don't know. She just came to this country with it. And they were rose diamonds. They weren't, they're what they called rose diamonds. They weren't like American diamonds. They're a little different.
Mm.
I don't think they're quite as valuable as American diamonds. They were called rose diamonds.
Still.
It's nice to have, Because I remember my grandmother very, very well.
What do you remember about her?
The most I remember about her is why I have these crackers, because my memories of going to visit Grandmama. Grandmama lived with my Uncle Jake Ostro at 2nd and Madison. And we'd go over to visit. I think we lived on West 4th Street at that time, 815 West 4th Street. And Mama would take me over to visit. And Grandmama would have, I think I spoke to you about this bag of crackers in the closet, mm-hmm. and how you bought them in the barrel in the store. And she, at the end, I always was afraid she'd forget to give me those crackers. And at the end, she always took out two crackers or maybe one. I can't remember now. But that was a big thing to me. So I always have a jar of crackers in there. And this little one, she doesn't like that kind. Isn't she something? She doesn't like that. That's the only kind I have. But anyway, so I remember that. I remember Grandmama sitting. Uncle Jake had a chair up at the front of the store. And Grandma really, I think, hardly spoke English.
Mm-hmm.
And she would sit up in the front of the store. I can envision it now. I remember her very well. And what was very interesting one time? You know, I guess all Jewish women after they got married wore a wig.
Mm, yeah.
What do they call them, peruke or something?
Shadow.
I don't know. Well, anyway, Grandmama's was brown, and I always thought, you know, what did I know? I thought her hair was brown. And one day, I walked by one of the bedrooms, and Mama was brushing Grandma's hair out, and it was gorgeous silver hair, like down to her waist. And I was so surprised. And we had Grandma's wig for a long, long time after she died, and then we finally said, you know, was maybe not the best thing to keep hang on to it. But that was, I remember that awfully well because that was startling to me. Yeah. She had gorgeous, and I couldn't understand why she'd want to cover up that gorgeous silver hair.
Did you understand Yiddish as a child?
Very little.
Oh,
very
little. They didn't speak it to you then?
Well, when they wanted to tell secrets, they told them in Russian. So we didn't know Russian, but we always knew it was a big secret when the family spoke Russian. But I could kind of understand a little bit, not a whole lot. I never spoke it, really. I just know, a couple of phrases or a word or two or something like that. But we spoke always English in the house. We always spoke English, except, as I say, if they had some family secret they wanted to say, they spoke Russian, which we didn't. I'm awfully sorry I didn't learn all of those languages. Yeah. Very important. Like I told this pupil now, you know, they come from Hong Kong, and the children were born here. And I said, oh, be sure to teach. She does speak Chinese to her.
Oh, that's good.
She does. She I said, don't them. Forget it, because that's important.
Because it's so hard to learn it later.
I know.
Yeah.
I took French up at Temple. 14 credits. Not Temple, Penn. 14 credits. You think when I went to France, do you think I could speak? I couldn't speak at all. It was terrible.
Could you understand people when you went? Could you understand?
No, it was too fast. Oh, it was too fast. Do you speak French?
I had it like for 5 years in high school and in college.
I had 2 years in high school.
But I don't know.
And 14 credits, and I got good marks because I studied hard and all the written work was good, but I really didn't speak it at all.
Yeah, I guess I'll find out.
I got a BA, BS in education in Penn when I was, let's see, 1958. I was like 50-some years old, 54, 55 years old. I did it the hard way, you know, Saturdays and nights and after schools and all that kind of thing. But I got a teacher's diploma from Peabody in 1922. And then 1933, when I started substituting in public school, my supervisor suggested that I take some methods course. I went down to the University of Delaware and took a methods course. That summer, it was hot.
I can't see how I could compare Delaware to Peabody in music at that.
I didn't take any music at Delaware.
It was an education.
Yeah, I took but I had to take a course in music methods, and the lady that gave the course, I knew we had been on in clinics together. And she said, what are you doing here? I said, I'm supposed to take the course. She said, you're going to be bored. I said, I'm supposed to take the course. So I took the course. I wasn't bored. She was a good teacher, and you always learn something. Did I tell you I went to that Suzuki thing in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah.
That was fascinating. And the president, Mrs. Carter, were there, up in the president's
room. Neat to see them.
It was, because I've never been that close to a president before. Though I was close to Roosevelt. I mean, not that close, but he was at the B&O station out here on Delaware Avenue.
Oh, really?
And I was down, yes. I don't know what year it was. It had to be, you know, when he was running, I think the second term. And he came on a whistle stop.
Huh.
And I ran up at lunchtime I was down at Brown Vocational School, ran up there. And I stood at the bottom of the embankment. Of course, he was up here. But it's not like being in the same room with a president.
Still, though, that's something.
Oh, it was wonderful. Oh, it was exciting. I was excited about him. So, what else can I tell you?
Let's see. You were going to tell me about the Beaker Colum Society.
Oh, yes.
in
the booklet that I bought from the Historical Society,
mm-hmm.
I didn't realize it and didn't really know it, but Grandmama and Mrs. Tiger, was her name Mrs. Tiger? The Topkiss mother, I think her name was Mrs. Tiger. It's in the book. And my grandmother's name was Hossie Ostrow, or Ann Ostrow. And another lady started the idea of having a place for elderly Jewish people to go if they were old or sick, you know, because there was no place for them to go except the Farnhurst, and they didn't like that one bit. And I really think, as I remember Mama telling, and this, I may have this wrong, that it was Mrs. Tiger was one that got sick or something, and they couldn't see that they should be, she should be down there, or maybe that's where she had to go. There was no other place, and that's why these women started. And I remember going around with Mama collecting. They collected 50-cent pieces, whatever people would give them from little. I remember just going to little grocery stores, and that's the way. And the, you know, they had a building. I don't. They had two buildings. At first, I don't know if the one was Second and West, or the two locations there. And I have a program from the dedication of one of these buildings that my sister spoke, and I led the temple choir, I think, or something. And anyway, I remember going to the meetings at in the basement of the Addis Kodesh. And I remember the long, and I was a little girl, very little, and I remember the long benches, and I would lie down and fall asleep on the long benches. You know, baby, you don't get babysitters over there. I think the women just took their children with them. And I remember, oh, they used to have arguments, and they would say, Schwester, Schwester, you know, calm down, calm down. But they ran a beautiful home. They really did. And those women were dedicated to it. And they, you know, they were in and out of that place, and it was immaculate, and the people had loving care. They really did, because these women were in and out. You know, it wasn't any cold efficiency business. It was a warm-hearted kind of a thing.
Did they have nurses and doctors there also, or did these volunteer women run the whole thing?
No, no, they had regular help, but not like they do today. I mean, not that kind of help today, because nobody had that kind of, I don't think, in those days. But I know, you know, they must have had a cook, and they had a man to... you do things. I really don't, you know, don't know about that part of it. But I used to go to a lot of meetings there, and my sister was the secretary for a while, and she used to read the minutes. And that was when we were older, when I was a young lady then. And we still went to all the meetings, and very active. And my Aunt Rose, Rose Barsky, was very active in it too. Oh, something I was going to tell you about. I'm not connected with that. Oh, my mother marched in the suffragette parade.
She did?
Yes, my mother helped start the Reformed Temple.
Oh, well, why don't you tell me something about that?
Oh, yes, and Mama told me that. See, my grandfather was Orthodox, and I know Grandmama had special pots, and, you know, she really kept an Orthodox house. But Mama was a foreseer of the future, I think, you know.
Was she born here, or was she born?
No, Mama was born in Russia.
But she came here.
She came, well, she came, maybe she was 20, 18, 20, around that my age. Mama told me that they had a room on Market Street on the second floor of some place, and that's how, where they started the temple. And Mama was always interested in it, and they finally, I don't know when, that temple, on which is torn down now on Washington Street, but we had Sunday school down in the basement, and we, believe it or not, we had an orchestra. We did. We had an orchestra, we had plays, we had everything down there, and it was a lovely, I loved that little temple, because you knew everybody. It was small, and you knew everybody, and you sat in the same seats. And our seat was R.H., and my sister's name was Rosalind Hillerson, so we always said it was the seat was named after her, you know, the bench, the pew. And let's see. And I remember very distinctly that the temple used to have like a bazaar, but we had it at 7-something West Street, near 710 West Street, like next door to it. I don't know what exactly, but people by the name of, I think their name was Rothschild, not Jules, but I think his name was F. No, I forget his first. Anyway, we used to have it near Yard, And they had a kind of a big yard, those houses on West Street, and we used to have our bazaars there. And it was a, you know, a very active community, and I was confirmed in the temple, my sister was confirmed in the temple, my son was confirmed in the temple, all our family. And then I taught, my sister taught Sunday school, I taught Sunday school, my sister sang in the choir for 25 years, and I led the choir for 20-some years, until they moved to this new building. I had taken a leave of absence, I think, right before they moved, and I just, you know, didn't go back again. What else can I tell you about the temple? Oh.
How did they decide to start a Reform synagogue?
I don't know.
Was your father involved in it also?
My father, I don't remember my father being that involved in it. He was in some men's club, and I don't know what it was, but I remember he took me there one time, and it was a place on Market Street, like a second floor, to play. I was a little girl, to play a violin solo. I remember going with him, and I remember how smoke-filled the room was, and I was coughing. I can see myself in my little white dress that my mother dressed me in, and I don't know what organization that was, but Papa was not